You are listening to Fantha Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
It's not true. That's impossible.
Hello from a very busy Birmingham NEC. Yes, it's episode 188 of Making Tracks, live at MegaCon. My name's Mark, I'm one of your co-hosts, and joining me this week on Making Tracks, of course, as always, is a man who's going to get arm ache because he's holding onto the Zoom recorder at a really awkward angle. It's Mr. Mark Newbold. Marky boy, how you doing?
Ow. I'm fine. Yes, it is an awkward angle, but I'm used to awkward angles because we've been doing this podcast for nearly 6 years, so yeah. Awkward angles is what we do.
Pretty much. God, man. So... We're just going to take a little wander around the floor of MegaCon and I guess just pick through the news and stuff. We've got a couple of interviews coming up in this week's episode, which is cool. So, let's start with story number one, Mark.
Yeah. All 9 Star Wars movies are coming back to the cinema. As far as we know, it's only happening in the States.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it will come to the UK. We don't know, but we do know we're all definitely getting The Phantom Menace.
Yes.
And there will be an exclusive reveal, clips from The Acolyte. Apart from celebrating Phantom Menace, which deserves all the flowers it gets, it's kind of cool that we could see some Acolyte stuff on a big screen.
Yes, exactly. I'd be really interested to see what they put out, like how much they show, in addition to what we've seen at the teaser trailer last week. But it is cool, and I mean, it would be great. I mean, I know tickets for Phantom Menace have gone on sale at View and Cineworld already, so you know you can get those from your box office or your app, or wherever you get them from. I mean, it would be great if we could see Star Wars, like 9 films again. I mean, I tell you what, though, it wouldn't be great to do a 9 film marathon at a cinema.
It would, but I had a conversation.
It would be a marathon.
It would be a marathon, 20 plus hours, I think, with 20 minute breaks. I'd like to say that I think I've got the stamina to do it, but I struggled with the special editions back in 97 doing the 3.
Yeah.
So, probably not, but I'd like to think I could. If you could only pick one trilogy to do on the big screen, awful question, but which one do you think you'd plumb for?
Do you know what? I'm going to say, because we have just recently had the original trilogy released before, like, the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
So, I would say the prequel trilogy. I would go with that because, again, you know, it's been relatively recently that we've seen the sequel trilogy on the big screen.
Yeah.
I mean, so recently, it's almost, 9 years since Force Awakens came out. So it is worrying. However, yeah, it's been even longer since we've seen the prequels. So that would be good. Because I think, it will capture probably another generation again.
I don't think I disagree with that. I think I'd probably pick the same, and it'd either be the prequels or the sequels. But yeah, on your logic, it's comparatively not been that long.
Mm.
I mean, even Phantom when it came out in 3D, that was 2012.
Yeah,
you know, that's 12 years ago. So probably go for the same.
Hey man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantha Tracks fan.
Further news, The Acolyte, we talked about it on our latest Making Tracks Reaction Chat episode. Going through a trailer for the first time, we've never gone through a trailer like that before.
No.
Which was fun, and we'll do that.
Anybody has.
No. Who's foolish enough to do that? But we will do it again, because we're idiots. But one of the things that Leslie Headland mentioned in her many interviews with various outlets, including Collider and Variety, was, in her opinion, from her point of view, or really from anyone's point of view, you could look at the Sith as the underdogs. And there's been a lot of kickback from certain fans who are pinning everything on the words of Ki-Adi-Mundi in The Phantom Menace, saying the Sith haven't been seen for a millennia, despite the fact that the film's called The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
And clearly they've been plotting and planning for many, many years. If you want to put it in the terms of you've got to sell it to an audience, a broad audience, who may be slightly resistant to it, how do you think they're going to get around the issue of bringing back the Sith without them being right out there in public view for everyone to see?
I think this series will be a lot of shadow, a lot of cloak and dagger. It kind of echoes what we really see in The Phantom Menace, where actually there's somebody orchestrating from the shadows and we don't really know who it is, and it's not realised until maybe the second or third or much later on. But the Sith are actually being the puppet masters. And in fairness, if they can set something up, if Leslie Headley can set something up in The Acolyte that actually kind of pays off in Revenge of the Sith, that would be cool.
She does seem to be very open to or keen to tie things together with the prequel to trilogy, because clearly what you see in Phantom Menace informs what we're going to see in The Acolyte.
I mean, exactly.
Aesthetically and just the tone of it all, and the slide from where they are in the High Republic to where we see them in The Acolyte, which is still the High Republic. We put a post on the site the other day, and her, you know, one of the questions put to her was, how many characters from the High Republic are we going to see in The Acolyte? And somebody on Fantha, one of the replies, pointed out with a smile, this is the High Republic.
Yes.
And they're quite correct, but we're at opposite ends of that particular timeline. But it's going to be interesting to see how much these all kind of fold into each other.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not even going to kind of dwell on the fact that, you know, this series on some level will be based on the publishing program that not many people have seen.
Yeah.
I think it's just part and parcel now of the Star Wars franchise that it's going to be, well, it's mass media, multimedia, and therefore, if there's going to be stuff that, like, unless you are engaging with everything, you're going to probably, you know, slip by you until you kind of watch your 65 or your 75 Easter eggs that you missed in the first episode of The Acolyte or whatever it's going to be called.
Star Wars Explained, drill into it.
Exactly, yeah. Star Wars Explained, or like Screen Crush, or, you know, all those people who can do all that. Or even like, as that, you know, Sander with his guides. FantaTracks.com.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's... We saw this. It's kind of a similar argument to what we had, and I think we even discussed this before Kenobi, about how Kenobi couldn't leave the planet.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, well, that's kind of what, that's our headcanons kind of saying that at the moment. There's nothing to say that he didn't leave, really.
Yeah.
So, in the same respects, as far as I'm concerned, the Sith really started with Darth Bane.
Yeah.
And so they've always been shadows. They've always been there. They just, you just maybe not have realised it.
Yeah.
And I think that is probably the way you're going to maybe kind of introduce a Sith.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's a question of how overtly you do it. And I think if you don't do it very overtly and you do a slow build over the course of season one or, like I said, season two or three, that will just make it even more exciting in the end.
And it's interesting that when Maul breaks cover on Tatooine and clashes with Qui-Gon, who, if the Sith, and we know the Sith know what the Jedi are up to because of Palpatine and other elements, that in any other decade, in any other century, Qui-Gon Jinn would have been on the council.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that his views at that time didn't quite jibe with what the council believed and put out there. So if he sees it, he believes it, he's aware of it, that means the Sith are known.
Exactly.
Even though the Jedi don't want to admit it.
Absolutely. It's just going to be something that we, you know, and we don't necessarily have too long to wait. I mean, it's not like an invalid question, but again, it's like you're hanging your lore on like a throwaway line that was set up for the film 25 years ago.
Yep.
That, you know, you have to pivot. And again, it's not retconning. It's, I guess it's just looking at stuff from a different point of view.
Hi, this is David W. Collins, voice actor for Star Wars and sound designer at Skywalker Sound. You are listening to FanthaTracks.
So in the last couple of weeks, sadly, we've lost three stars from the Star Wars saga. Bill Hargreaves, who is the prop maker and model maker who built IG-88, amongst other characters and creatures, the Minok. He's passed away, sadly. Michael Culver, Captain Nida from The Empire Strikes Back, he passed away a couple of weeks ago. And Mark Dodson, the voice of Salacious Crumb in Return of the Jedi. So three original trilogy guys all gone within the last couple of 3 weeks. I mean, we say this whenever anybody passes away, it's life. No one's getting any younger. But that's three key contributors to the original trilogy right there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a dent into, like, you know, Comic-Con appearances and stuff. You know, those three were fairly active and stuff, which is a shame. Especially Michael Culver, you know, I think he was doing stuff fairly recently.
Yeah.
So it's like I always say, every time you get the opportunity, listeners, to meet a Star Wars actor, just maybe take a step back and go, don't just put it off to the next time, because the next time might not come along.
very true. And we did not put off the chance whilst we were here at MegaCon to talk to Mark Thompson, audiobook genius who's done so many voices, so many books, so many stories. We had a few minutes with him talking to Mark Thompson, the three Marks, not just the two Marks, the three Marks, at MegaCon.
We, me and Mark, are here with Mark. That makes things easy, doesn't it?
Yeah. No one knows who's talking.
Exactly, who's talking?
Well, you can do all the voices. You can do all of it.
Yeah.
MegaCon, it's my first MegaCon. I don't think it's your first MegaCon.
No, it's my second or third.
Your first UK
MegaCon? First time in the UK, actually. So.
Oh, okay. So how are you finding it?
Really great so far. We went to a fun restaurant. Like, I think it was called The Wilderness last night. And, and we're going to kind of extend the trip and be in London next week. So excited about it, yeah.
And how have you never been here for celebration of all the people?
I know. The most honest answer is these guys were willing to fly me out, but Celebration didn't. I didn't get offered that, and I wanted to go to Celebration just as a fan, but it felt too far. There was just too much going on, and so I regret it though. I have major FOMO because then I saw all the stuff that happened, and I have friends that went, and I was like, why didn't I just go? And so I'm kind of dipping my toe into thinking about Japan. Like, I'm like, maybe, you know, it looks really expensive, but I really regret not going to coming here. So maybe I'll go to Japan as a fan. So
you've got that great Kenobi costume.
Oh yeah. So and now actually, I haven't. It's not Rebel Legion approved, but I just got a High Republic one going. I might wear that as well. So
very cool. So obviously, speaking of High Republic and that kind of era. What did you make of the Acolyte trailer?
Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah. I think it looks so good. Like, I just the tone of it looks really interesting and kind of, you know, mysterious. And, like, I'm a huge Jedi fan, so, like, getting to kind of explore the Jedi. And Carrie Ann Moss as a Jedi was, like, amazing. Yeah. I was, like, I had forgotten that she was in it. And as soon as I saw her, I was, like, Trinity? like, because she just... like, she looks so awesome, and you can tell she's doing all her own action, and just I'm over the moon about it. I can't wait to see it. So,
and obviously there'll be some we assume there will be some kind of publishing program around that. So given that you're stoked, clearly maybe are you thinking in your head possibly something along the lines of what you do with the other books comes along? How excited would you be to get the opportunity to do that?
Oh, I would. If that happens, I would be blown away. Like, I've really enjoyed The High Republic. Like, I love all the Star Wars stuff, but I felt like the authors have done such a great job of really exploring and expanding the Jedi's relationship with the Force. And I've just really enjoyed how each Jedi has a different metaphor that helps them understand the Force. And even like the antagonists, like the Nile and the Path of the Open Hand, are such interesting counterpoints to how the Jedi view the Force and interact. So I just think that whole era is really engaging and interesting, and I've really, really loved it.
And so, like, when you have these characterizations, it must obviously help with what you do in the recording booth, does it? Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so much of the inspiration for the voices is just on the page itself. Like, there's not a lot of work for me to do, because they're so clearly defined and clearly thought out, and great contrast to each other. And so, and obviously, and then also the concept art that has come out has been very helpful. And I got a chance to look at that before we did Light of the Jedi, and so that felt extra special, and so there was a lot of inspiration from those drawings.
I mean, I think for the fandom in general, just having that concept art just helps, because like you said, it's a new era and new characters, so it just helps to really bed everybody into that kind of visual language.
So
do you, when you're doing these performances, especially for like the High Republic, who's your favorite voice to do, if you can pick one?
That is pretty hard. It's hard to pick. I like Elzar as a character, just because he's so complicated, and he's kind of like a. Like, he's very He's very low and, you know, kind of like resonant, so it's a little easier on the voice.
Yeah.
But it was fun to come up with a voice for Orbalin, like, because he was like described as this like gelatinous, like, you know, blob thing. And I don't think Kevin, the director, liked that one too much because it was hard to understand at times, and he was like, less. And I'm like, but I really wanted to kind of like make
lean
that
it,
exactly lean in. So that was fun. Yeah.
For me, I really like your, like, Mark and Roe. I think that's,
thank you.
That's really cool.
That was another one that was interesting because I think as we're talking, there's a mouse droid with Grogu riding it around. It's pretty hilarious. Markion was interesting to come up with because I knew he was going to be the big bad of this series, and I was trying to come up with something that was different than, you know, kind of like British, you know, bad guy, whatever. And I love the way that Charles described him. There was one line in the book that described his voice as, like, you know, not shouting, but quiet, almost like a whisper. And I really latched onto that, and I kind of decided that that would be his MO. And he kind of, in the concept art, he looks almost like a shark to me. Like, he has this, like, gray skin and these solid black eyes. So I like the idea of a shark kind of moving silently through the water until it's time to attack. And when it's time to attack, it's incredibly vicious and ferocious. But when, up until that point, it's very stealthy and kind of silent, and, you know, so.
So it creates a lot of, like, dynamic. Dynamism in it.
When we listen to you sometimes, I find it really interesting because you do all timbres of voices or genders of voices, and sometimes you hear the Jack Nicholson. You hear the George Takei. And so,
that's cool that you pick up on that.
So do you have almost like a play box of, I know I can dip into that for a background character.
Yeah.
Just to delineate him from the next guy.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I started doing this before social media was a big thing. And so I started doing it as a way of, like, keeping myself able to keep everyone clear. And also, like, there was a part of me that was like, well, if this were a movie, what are some actors that might be cast in this, you know? But then, like, as social media's become more popular, like, I've seen, like there was somebody that did a meme of, like, Jack Nicholson painted blue with red eyes as a chiss, and I was like, oh, no, like, people are finding out my tricks or whatever. But I still feel like it works. Like, I still feel like it, like, you know, in my justification, if this were live action, I think some acro could be, like, a Jack Nicholson type, and I think it would work. So it helps me, performance-wise, keep them straight, and then hopefully just for the listener too, like, having a very specific choice like that is hopefully helping people keep the characters clear in their mind. So,
have you ever run out of voices? Like, have you ever got to a point with a Star Wars book, especially Star Wars book, because there seems to be so many in the High Republic?
I sometimes have to just surrender to that, because, like, you know, like, somebody recently was like, I forget which two characters, but they were like, hey, how come so-and-so sounds like so-and-so? And I was just like, it kills me that happens. But when you've done so many, and there's so many, there's only so many notes I can play in my voice, you know, after a while. Yeah. So, you know, I try to make them as distinct as I can. So,
I mean, because what? You started, what, 2007? Fate of Jedi? Or the Legacy of the Force?
Legacy of the Force.
Fate of Jedi.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have a two-hour commute to work and two-hour commute back. So, for me, you're like the voice of Star Wars.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Because if you imagine, like, since all that time, most of the audiobooks you've covered way or another. So, so I listen to you a lot, you know.
Oh, wow.
Which is cool.
It's not creepy at all.
No, it's not meant to be. Because, I mean, I have both hands on the wheel at all times, so it's all good. But, you know, it's I think it's really interesting just, like, being able to sit down and kind of go through the process and understand kind of, like, you know, your mindset. And also, I think what's really nice is, I think it comes across very clearly that you are a fan of
cool,
Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some of the other franchises where they have voice narration and voice acting doing the audiobooks, you kind of go, just kind of reading it fairly straight.
Right.
And you kind of go, oh, if they just had a production that they did in Star Wars and some other novels, you just go, oh, just elevate it so much.
We're really spoiled because the Star Wars ones, they can afford to do the full music and sound effects and the Lucasfilm sound bank. And Kevin Thompson is really dedicated to making it the best possible quality, and will sometimes even, like, push for things to make sure that the quality remains where it needs to be. And so like I can't remember if I told you this story years ago or not, but I did another franchise book, and I remember like kind of asking the director halfway through, like, hey, do you want me to pause here for the sound effect? Like, you know, because he's shooting a beam here, and he was like, what sound effect? And I was like, you know, like, are you going to, and they're like, we don't do sound effects. I was like, what? And I was like, and it was a major thing, and I was like, you know, because I was just so used to Star Wars and what Kevin does, so... So yeah, they really knock it out of the park, and they really do a great job keeping it really high quality, and yeah.
And a lot of singers have a warm-up, so a lot of performers have to protect their voice.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your process? Yeah, because you're talking a lot.
Yeah, yeah. The best thing, I don't have any cool like secret cough drop or secret drink. I drink a lot of water, and I once had a mentor tell me a lot of sleep. Like, because if you sleep, it kind of resets your voice. And then, you know, in the shower, I'm practicing the voices. And when I'm walking the dog, I'll, if I'm trying out a voice, I'll, like, try to stay in character and read, like, different street signs as that character to see if I like the way that, if I can keep it consistent and, you know, so.
And what's the best time of day to record? Some singers don't like singing in the morning.
Oh.
So what's the best time for you to record?
Well, when it comes to the audiobooks, I don't have a choice. It's like you're there all day. So, like, you know, I usually get warmed up, like, after lunch. But, like, the first, you know, the morning is, the morning is harder because your voice is not totally warmed up, but the challenge is sometimes in the morning you're fresh and you have a little more energy, but by the end of the day you're a little more worn out. So there's challenges any time of day.
How long does the average kind of audiobook take to record?
It's different for different narrators. I'm kind of a slow reader, so usually it takes us about 5 days, like a 10 till 5 or 6 at night. Yeah. So, and then sometimes if they're longer or shorter, it can vary that. But I'm a slower reader, and I'm sometimes a bit of a perfectionist. So sometimes I take more takes than I should, and it makes it harder on the editors. Sorry, guys. But yeah.
And as a fan,
yeah.
You're getting to experience.
Yes, exactly.
You're living them almost.
Yeah.
That must be a kick.
No, it's so fun. Yeah, sometimes like. There's this, we record it sometimes at this place called CDM Studios, and they have like, you know, different LED lights. So sometimes we'll change the mood lighting if it's a particular scene, and, you know, have it in like Sith red or like Jedi blue or, you know, so. So we really get into it, yeah.
I can't say what's next, but are you excited for what's next?
Yes. I'm very, very excited about what's next, yeah. I'm waiting on the script for what's next. I'm recording very soon, and I don't have the script yet, so I really want to start preparing for it. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well,
Mark, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you guys. I really appreciate it. It's great to see you again.
Everything in one location. Daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video, and social media feeds. Bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
This came as quite the surprise. Patty Jenkins was speaking recently, and let slip, well, more than let slip, she put it right out there that she is still involved with Rogue Squadron.
Yes.
Not Rogue One. Rogue Squadron. And that there are still moves to make this project happen. I think much to the surprise of everybody, not least the Star Wars fandom. I was surprised to hear that. What were your thoughts on that coming out?
Yeah, I was really surprised. I mean, Rian Johnson still talks about his Star Wars trilogy.
Very true.
You know, so...
Very true. Who's just signed that two-picture deal with Warner Brothers.
Exactly, yeah. But, I guess it's the whole thing of, like, until we start hearing other confirmation from Lucasfilm about it's either in production, maybe they're able to work through the script, or they're working through the script and issues that they had with the story. But I don't think there's anybody to a man who actually thought the Rogue Squadron was a bad idea. So, and all we really heard of is the name and that one kind of like video pitch that she kind of put on, you know. So, as far as I'm concerned, it's the nature of, you know, the film media and press and stuff, like rumors come out, they generate clicks.
That's very true. We had Lando that we thought was going to be a TV series, and now it's going to be a film.
Yes.
You've got Rogue Squadron that is a film that feels, to me, would be way more suited to be a TV series.
Yeah.
Do you think there's the potential then, now that she's back on it, now that she's involved again, that she's not doing Wonder Woman 3 and the Cleopatra thing's not happening,
it's cleared the decks for her to get fully involved and invested with a writing team, with other people.
Exactly.
Do you think there's a potential that it could flip the switch and become a TV show?
Well, it could do, and I mean, it could very much end up being the Rangers of New Republic.
That's
gap. You know, it could fill that gap. I don't think I ever heard anybody saying it was going to be just because it's Rogue Squadron, but it's set in between, say, Empire and Jedi.
Yeah.
You know, so it
that's
could,
just our assumption.
That's
isn't it?
Exactly our assumption. So it could be that. It could be that kind of that series that we were meant to have. And like you said, if she's got more time now, and maybe that's the way to go, and maybe it's even seen by Disney and Lucasfilm as a slightly safer option and some more content for Disney Plus that they sorely need at the moment.
It does feel, if it's a movie, to me anyway, it feels like it would need to be part of a bigger narrative.
Yeah.
That you couldn't just do Top Gun as a movie with Star Wars slapped on it.
No.
But if it was a TV series, you build up the drama, you build the characters, the situations, and you could drop it into an era. And like you say, I think you hear Rogue Squadron, you think of the Battle of Hoth, you think of that era of Star Wars, but not necessarily the case that it could quite easily go beyond like it did in the books.
Yeah.
You know, the Stackpole and Aaron Alston novels.
Into Rogue Squadron and all that, yeah. I mean, you could, and here's my pitch, if you're going to set it in that era, maybe it's somebody like Wedge or one of the other pilots who are kind of basically kicking out mothballs. They need to, you know, if this could be set 25, 30 years after Return of the Jedi, so just before that Force Awakens, it could be an initiative that has been set going by Princess Leia.
Yeah.
You know, and it's greenlit by her for her resistance, and it's basically to get those pilots up and running.
That's a great point you make, because if they do that, a lot of people have been talking online about how. And that's such a vague comment. A lot of people have been talking online, but people waggle the egg. You do see people talking about stuff.
Yeah.
And the thought that maybe we're at the point now, as a group of people watching Star Wars on TV or wherever, that you do recast Han, Luke and Leia, because if you want to tell these stories, you know, like you, that's a great pitch.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to do that, you need Leia. We haven't got Carrie anymore.
No.
It would be exorbitantly expensive and kind of distasteful if they did a CG version of Carrie Fisher as Leia. So maybe it is time to recast certain characters at different ages. We've got Vivian Laura Blair who could play her through her teens if we wanted
to.
You know, what do you think to that? There's the potential for that, certainly, isn't
it? I think so. I mean, I'm very on board with recasting characters, because I think you have to allow the characters to be more than just tied to one actor, because otherwise it does mean that you are tying story potentials to like either a specific age of a character, which makes it very difficult to then do anything with, especially when they're no longer around.
And speaking of characters that have had different actors playing them at different points of their career, Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader, we've got Hayden Christensen back. He's just been up the Empire State Building turning the lights on that fantastic light show they did for Imperial March. Jake Lloyd has been in the news as well very recently. Of course, he's had his troubles, his issues, he's working through them. It seems like he's making progress. His mom came out and made a few statements about that, which I think was great for fans, for Star Wars fans, and potentially healthy for him to know that there is a support within the fandom, a fandom that really did just hound the poor kid into just a horrible corner in terms of his relationship with Star Wars. It seems that he's now very much enjoying Star Wars content. His mum said that he watches it, enjoys it, that the Star Wars fandom wasn't the issue, that it was an issue completely separate to that, that it was something that he would have had to deal with anyway. But he's kind of back in our consciousness again. Not just because Phantom's 25 years old, but that's kind of cool that he's back in our thoughts again.
It's nice, yeah. I mean, I was trying to think. I can't remember. I was at Earl's Court when I met Jake Lloyd, and it would sort of been a Showmasters London Film Comic Con, so I'm thinking 2009 or 10, maybe. Yeah. And he was really nice. He was really chatty about, you know, I think you could say humbled by the fact that, like, people wanted his autograph for this role that he did, you know, like 10, 15 years before.
Yeah.
You kind of look at, like the flack that Ahmed Best got for Phantom Menace and the love that he's now getting, and you kind of think that, you know, Star Wars fans should have always done better with Jake. And I feel that now's the time, maybe, for us to step up a little bit and give him that extra support, you know. Because I think also, in some respects, again, negatively speaking about the, like, Star Wars, like, media, as it were, like the fans, and I think a lot of people kind of took his diagnosis in a kind of in jest and not in the way that it was probably should have been dealt with when it was announced.
And also, I think now as a society, we're more aware of these things.
Exactly.
And more conscious of what it means.
Exactly.
It wasn't so well explained then. It wasn't so well understood. Now I think it probably is.
Exactly. So I think that's good. And so, you know, we wish him well, and hopefully we'll get to see him back maybe at a convention soon. It'd be fantastic if that's the case.
This is Adam Christopher, and you're listening to FanthaTrax.
So whilst we're here at MegaCon, walking the halls, we had the chance to talk to UK Garrison Commanding Officer Michael Cullen. It's the first time we've had a chance to speak to him, so I took him to one side, gave him a stern talking to him. No, I didn't. We had a nice chat. So here's myself and Michael talking here at MegaCon. How's it going? It's a big show. It's in Birmingham. It's a home for Star Wars costuming groups. There's a long history of shows coming to this particular room, if you like. How's it been for you for this time?
It's been great. It's my first big con, I would say, as CO. And to be fair, I haven't personally done a lot other than came and helped build the stand. But the events team and the Imperial West Midlands squad have done a fantastic job. I mean, the stand looks amazing and the effort they've put in has been incredible. But yeah, it's been great. I mean, the show seems to be a little bit quieter than normal than we would have expected, but there's been good interaction, people are having fun, and yeah, loving it.
It's a busy year, it's always a busy year, there's always loads of shows on. It's a non-celebration year, which is probably not a bad thing. For yourself now, obviously early days, for yourself in your role, but is it a good thing actually that it's not shoulder to shoulder, that you have got a chance to talk to everyone, to take a bit of a step back and get a bit of a broader view on what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the decisions I made for when I was going to come up to this event was to not costume, so I could get around, talk to members, talk to people like yourself. And there was an impromptu talk at 12:30 on the creator stage that I got invited to, so it gave me the opportunity to do that. So yeah.
And you're all up for doing stuff like that, getting out there, talking to people, spreading the message of what you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to be honest, there's not that we are at all, but there is that bit of a reputation about the garrison from the wider cosplay community, and that's something I'm trying to break down, and doing things like that and getting to talk to people and stuff, and yeah, just all helps.
And how has it been how many months in now? 3 months? About 3 months?
Not even that. Isn't I think it? It's about a month and a half.
Wow. Wow. Probably feels so fast. Yeah.
Feels longer.
How has it been? I mean, it's been a big change that things were as they were for quite a long time, and now there's been a change. How's it been for you?
It's been all right. I felt it's not as challenging as I thought it was going to be, which is the thing. I mean, I've got a 9-to-5 job, which I go and do, and then I'll come home and I'll spend sort of 3-4 hours maybe of an evening doing stuff. Not every evening, but most evenings. And then the rest of the time I'll spend with my other half, or if it's a weekend, with the family and stuff. So I try and get that sort of balance right, and it seems to be working at the moment.
And in terms of other groups, I mean, there's a lot of groups now in the UK. In recent times, we've had Saber Gorgon's propped up now, Dark Empire's now here in the UK. So there's more groups to work with and associate with. Going forward, what are your hopes for that kind of collaboration with other groups?
Just to build and work with all the other groups and, yeah, develop those relationships, just to make sure that, because we're a community, we're a Star Wars fan-based community, and all the other groups have the same objectives to, you know, bring smiles to faces, and if we can, raise some money for charities. So the more we can do that together, the more that we're going to be able to raise and make people happy.
And when did it all start for you? What was your first costume? When did you get into all of this?
So I first encountered the garrison, 2013, 2014, at Legoland, and yeah, was there with the family, saw them and stuff, and thought, first time it's like, oh, this is really cool, we get to see Star Wars characters, photos, etc. The second time it's like, oh, I wonder if I could do that, and it just grew from there. And then, yeah, 2015, I signed up, cleared Darth Revan, which I love, it was my favourite. And then, yeah, from there, got to know people and stuff. And then I was first in the Legion to clear a Director Krennic after Celebration 2016. So it's just, yeah, and now here I am, CO.
And to do what you're doing now as CO, is it important to have a real grounding in the trooper culture, if that makes sense? Do you think you need to be really deep in the weeds on that one to understand what everybody goes through?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps have some experience. I mean, I'm 100 plus troops and that, and been a member like I say, since 2015. I also served as a Legion Captain of the Guard, which gave me a bit more insight. So yeah, I think it certainly helps for an understanding, but it's also, it's getting out and meeting people and listening to them. That's the key thing. Yeah. It's listening to other members and hearing what they're saying and just so you know the challenges that they're facing, because everybody's different and everybody faces different challenges in life. And it's, yeah, just understanding and how I can take that knowledge and my experience from being an old captain of the guard and just sort of put that into, right, let's see if we can make this work and just bring in changes. I'm not looking to do anything big or revolutionary at the moment. It's just that let's see what tweaks we can make. And so far, it's been really positive.
Yeah, it's a great atmosphere here today for certain. In terms of being a Star Wars fan, what's lighting you up at the moment? I mean, running a group, it can be all consuming. I know running Panther, it can be all consuming. You don't look beyond the Indian Ocean sometimes. But
yeah.
What's lighting you up?
I love all the TV series. I mean, Andor is amazing because my favourite film is Rogue One. But yeah, just seeing Andor and how that's going to feed into Rogue One and. Yeah, but I'm looking forward to Acolyte when that comes out. And yeah, just really excited for the TV series.
And also every time there's a new show, I mean, obviously me and Mark do the show, and every time something comes along like Acolyte, first thing he says, wow, wonder which costume is going to be the first one to get cleared for the Legion, you know. And for yourself, it must be a similar thought process.
Yeah, absolutely. Being a member costume or whatever, it changes the way you see films and TV shows, and you notice all the different details in the costume, yeah. And you think, oh, that's going to be quite challenging for someone to make and stuff, and it's like, oh, they've used that seam there, I wonder why they've done that and stuff. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what does come through first.
And do you enjoy the archaeology of that, digging into figuring out what the materials are, or how well the process for making things work?
Yeah, I think I do, but it's not my skill set, so I try and sort of tinker costumes and stuff to get them cleared and that. But yeah, I love all the detail and stuff, and like I'll watch something two or three times just to see bits, different details and stuff that you miss the first time round and stuff.
So we've got, like you said, we've got a busy year with the LFCC in here. There's all sorts of stuff happening around May the 4th. What's kind of on your dance card for the next few months?
At the moment, it's just sort of working on garrison business, but I'm heading up to Sheffield. There's a football game, Sheffield Wednesday, I think, versus Nottingham Forest. There's a troop there I'm going to that's supporting the hospice up in that area. And then on, that's May the 4th, and on the Sunday, I'm heading over to the Space Centre, so I'll be there. But generally, it's just see what troops come up that I can get to, and yeah, and garrison business.
Garrison business. Well, you're always very welcome on Making Tracks.
Oh, thank you.
And thanks for giving me some time.
No problem.
If you want to be part of the action, visit fanthatracks.com or be sure to comment, like and share on our social media feeds at Fanthatracks. Send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the Fanthatracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook, YouTube and Twitch. And check out our Fanthatracks Radio Friday night rotation every Friday at 7 o'clock UK time for new episodes of The Phantom from Down Under, Planet Layer, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, Cannon Fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks. And every Tuesday at 7 o'clock UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks. And remember, Fanthatracks.com, our social media feeds, Fanthatracks TV and Fanthatracks Radio are absolutely free. So no Patreon, Buy Me A Coffee, Kickstarter or Indiegogo required to stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news.
Until we catch up with you again, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fantha Tracks Radio, it's Collecting Tracks.
Boo.